The general title here is Living in Exile and Longing for Home. That's the kind of general theme of this letter from Peter that we're looking at. Now, when I was a kid in the 1970s, there was a pop group called Boney M. And their most famous song, I think, was By the Rivers of Babylon. It's still listed, apparently, I learned this week, as one of the top best-selling singles of all time in the UK. How about that? What does that say about us? Anyway, By the Rivers of Babylon. And it's an interesting song because it's based on a psalm, Psalm 138, which is all about the Jews in exile in Babylon, a long way from home, and the kind of suffering that they're experiencing, and the longing for being back home. There's one line in the song by Boney M that says this. I think it's based on the psalm as well. Now, how can we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? You see, many of the Lord's songs were all about Jerusalem and the temple and going up to worship and how God is the great God. And here they are in Babylon, surrounded by people who worship other gods and who are kind of mocking them and saying, oh, sing one of those songs again. How can we sing the Lord's song in a strange land, they ask. Well, I want to change that title slightly for our message this morning. How can we live the Lord's way in a strange land? How can we live the Lord's way in a strange land? You see, Peter has described Christians, people who've come to faith in the Lord, as, in verse 10, the people of God. We're the people of God, he says. And in verse 11, he describes Christians as foreigners and exiles in the world. It's a big theme in the letter. But what does Peter mean by that? What does it mean for us in Cheshire in the 21st century to live as strangers and exiles? Does the Lord call us to withdraw from the rest of society and live in a kind of Christian ghetto? Or does he call us to blend into the culture so we don't seem any different from anybody else? What does God want? How do we live the Lord's way in a strange land? Well, thankfully, Peter's going to tell us. He's going to tell us in these verses. Number one, live such good lives, he says, verses 11 to 12. Live such good lives. There it is in verse 12. Among the pagans. Now that's interesting, isn't it? Not apart from them, not in some Christian commune or subculture. No, live such good lives among the pagans, among the Gentiles, among the people you are living with. Now how can we do that? Well, firstly, we must abstain from sinful desires which war against our souls. That's what he says in verse 11. Now that word abstain is a strong word. It's not a sort of, it's not a gentle, polite word saying, well, you know, if it's too much trouble for you. No, abstain is a strong word, a strong call to continually keep away from sinful desires that are out to make war against your soul. Don't indulge them, says Peter. Now these sinful desires are passions, sometimes it's translated, that are strong and they are varied. And in some parts of the New Testament, you get some listed, like in Galatians chapter 5, for example. Let me give you a few from that list. Sexual immorality is one. Sexual passion outside God's blueprint for marriage, for sexual relationships, which is a good gift from God. Now that's maybe an obvious one, but there are others here. Hatred, jealousy, fits of rage, selfish ambition. John calls it the pride of life. It's all about me. Factions and envy, this idea of them and us, which is so prevalent in society, isn't it? Them and us. Or envying, hating other people because of what they've got. Now these passions are pictured as soldiers that are attacking us, attacking your soul, says Peter. You're involved in a war, and you've got to be active, you've got to abstain. That's the first thing. Otherwise, your any kind of good life you want to live is going to be undermined. Secondly, we are called to live good lives that produces good deeds in verse 12. And I think Peter must have been remembering the words of Jesus here, who said something very similar. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. It's almost word for word there in verse 12, isn't it? Though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. Now Peter's going to give some practical scenarios. We're going to look at one or two, and he's going to give a few more as we go on in this letter. But the third point is this. Look at the effects. Look at the effects of good lives producing good deeds. Pagans who are initially hostile will actually come and see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. Now, the day God visits us, I think Peter means by that, is a day of grace, when God draws near and seeks to bring people to salvation, to faith in Jesus. Now, Peter isn't saying that's always going to happen, inevitably. He's not saying that. But I think he's saying this: when God draws near to save people, so often he speaks to them through the lives of his people, the good lives that they're living, the good deeds they perform. In Christianity Explored, on the website there, you can read a few stories of how different people have come to faith. And there's one lady there called Katharina. She describes how she became a Christian. She came over to the UK from the Ukraine with her partner, with her two young children. How did God speak to her? How did God reach her? Well, it was through the friendship of a mum at the school gate. And eventually this Christian mum invited her to church, and she began to listen. She began to see Christians loving one another, and she was drawn in, and she trusted Jesus Christ herself. But that would never have happened if it wasn't for the good deeds of her friend, Lisby, who offered genuine friendship to a foreigner. And eventually realized, Katharina realized, I really needed this God thing that she had. It's always great to hear how people become Christians, come to faith in the Lord. And I've heard many, many stories, but I've never heard anyone say this. You know, there was this Christian I knew, and she was just like me. Or there's this Christian guy I knew, and he was just as self-centered as everybody else. I've never heard that. You know, I usually hear people say, well, it was somebody in the office, or someone down at the club, or someone on my street who was a Christian, and there was something different about their lives. And it was a positive thing. And that's what drew me. So how can we live the Lord's way in a strange land? Peter's clear. This is the first point. Abstain from sinful passions and desires. Live good lives producing good deeds, and trust God for the results. John Newton, writing to a friend, said this. John Newton became a pastor later on, in the 18th century, the guy who wrote Amazing Grace. And he wrote to a friend, most people are more likely to be convinced of the gospel by what they observe of you than what they hear from us. Most people are more likely to be convinced by what they observe of you than what they hear from us. There's a challenge. Secondly, how can we live the Lord's way in a strange land? Well, we're to live as good citizens. Good citizens. Verses 13 to 15. This is the first, perhaps, specific example that Peter's going to give us of what it means to do good. And I want you to notice, he doesn't say here, well, you're Christians, you're to live as exiles, you're the people of God, you don't have to listen to any kind of human government, you don't have to really be involved in all that, you can ignore human authority. He doesn't say that at all. In fact, he urges us to submit to every human authority. Look what he says. Whether to the emperor as to the supreme authority, or to governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and commend those who do right. In other words, who maintain law and order. Now, a quick mental note. When Peter is writing this letter, who is the emperor? Well, it's Nero. Nero is the Roman emperor who murdered his mother and whose rule is characterized by brutal tyranny and gross self-indulgence. And who are examples of governors? Well, governors included Pontius Pilate, hardly the paragon of virtue and justice. But it's interesting to remember that Jesus, when he stood before Pilate, he said these words, "You would have no power over me if it were not given to you from above." So that's the thinking. That's the thinking here in Peter. We are to submit to human authorities, whether it's the supreme authority or local authorities. And Peter's not naive in thinking that human authority is somehow nice or always fair. So why should we submit to these authorities? Why should Christians both then, back then, and now submit to human authorities? You see, many people today will submit to the government out of fear. Don't break the lockdown rules, we might get fined. Fear. Disapproval. Don't break the lockdown rules, what'll the neighbours say? No, Christians are to be different. We are to submit, it says, for the Lord's sake. You see that, verse 13? For the Lord's sake. Now what does that mean? Well, I think it could mean a couple of things. For the sake of pleasing him. This is what the Lord wants. So submit to authorities for the Lord's sake, because it pleases him. And I think also it can mean for the Lord's sake, for the sake of his reputation, so that his name is honoured. And you silence the ignorant talk of foolish people who are claiming that Christians are somehow undermining authority and bad for the government and all this kind of thing. So there's the first example of living a good life among pagans. It's to be good citizens, to respect those in authority, to obey the laws of the land, to pay your taxes, to play a positive role in society. Christians, of all people, are to be model citizens, not anarchists or rebels. And that's our responsibility. Now, I referred to John Newton already. I think he's relevant for such a time as this at the moment. John Newton was part of the slave trade, took part in that for many, many years. And then, of course, he was converted. And the famous hymn Amazing Grace is a testimony to what happened to him, how God changed him. Later on, he went into the ministry, the church ministry, became a vicar in the Church of England, moved down to London eventually, and deeply regretted what he did in those early years in slavery. Now, in 1779, William Wilberforce went to visit him in London. William Wilberforce was a young MP, and then he'd been converted as well. And he wanted to ask advice. Newton was a kind of an uncle figure to him. And he said, Wilberforce thought, well, I'll have to leave Parliament now. I should become a vicar like you. And John Newton said, no, you stay there. You stay there and serve God where you are. And Wilberforce took his advice. And then, of course, for many years, campaigned for the abolition of slavery. And that campaign wasn't over in a minute or a year. It took years and years and years to campaign and eventually get a victory. But Wilberforce nearly gave up. There was one vote in the Commons and he really thought they were going to win. And it was a really close call. And they lost by a few votes. And do you know why? Because certain MPs couldn't be bothered to vote. They went off to the opera instead. And Wilberforce was about to give up and throw it all in. And John Newton wrote to him and said these words, "You are not only a representative for Yorkshire, you have the far greater honour of being a representative for the Lord in a place where many know him not, and an opportunity of showing them what are the genuine fruits of that religion which you are known to profess." They're great words. And of course they're great words and great advice for us all. If we belong to the Lord, if we are Christians, if we are following Christ, we are representatives of the Lord in every place where many don't know him. And the fruit of our faith is to be exemplary citizens. Now, does that mean that we can never protest? No, it doesn't. We live in a land where peaceful protest is allowed by law. We are free to protest against injustice, free to write. Does it mean that we must always obey? Well, no, it doesn't. There may be instances where obeying the government is at odds with obeying God. And Peter is an example here. Do you remember in the early chapters of Acts, the authorities, the Jewish authorities, arrest him and others, and they say, you must not speak about Jesus Christ. You must stop speaking about him. And Peter says these words, we must obey God rather than men. The Bible allows for civil disobedience. Think of Daniel in captivity. When the law goes out, no praying to any god except the king. Daniel doesn't obey. And think of Christians today, maybe in lands where they are oppressed, they're not allowed to meet by law. Some are meeting. Or they're not allowed to spread the word, the gospels. Well, they're doing that. But the emphasis here is placed on the positive. How can I live the Lord's way in a strange land? By doing good for the Lord's sake as a citizen in the place where I live, where I work, where I play. Be good citizens. That's the challenge. And lastly, live as God's slaves. Live as God's slaves. Look at verses 16 to 17. Now, how does that sound to you? Would you describe yourself as God's slave? Isn't that shocking? I mean, today slavery has 100% negative connotations, doesn't it? And we think automatically think of the days of John Newton and the slave trade, which is horrific. Now, Peter also says in these verses, live as free people. Oh, that sounds a lot better, doesn't it? That sounds a lot better. Freedom sounds cool. Freedom sounds good. How can you therefore live as free people and yet also live as God's slaves? Aren't they contradictory? Well, I wonder if Peter is recalling the teachings of Jesus on slavery and freedom. Remember some of the things Jesus said about slavery and freedom? No one can serve two masters. He says, you can't serve both God and money. You'll either be devoted to one, mastered by one, or you'll be mastered by the other. And then he says, if you hold to my teachings, you are really my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. So freedom there comes through submission to Jesus' teaching, to his lordship. Nowhere in the Bible do we find this idea that we can be completely free to do what we like. That concept isn't there. Martin Luther wrote a book called The Bondage of the Will, and he's arguing that no one is completely free. We're always slaves to one master or another. And when Peter says, live as God's slaves, you know, for some people in Peter's day, if you had a good master, if you had a kind master, you were in a great position. Your slaves could be doctors, teachers, household workers. But if you had a good master, that made all the difference. That's what he's getting at here. Live as God's slaves. He is a good master. Yes, he's a father. He's also our Lord. Live as God's slaves, he says. The singer Bob Dylan wrote a song called Gotta Serve Somebody. This is what he says in the song. You may be an ambassador to England or France. You may like to gamble. You may like to dance. You may be the heavyweight champion of the world. You may be a socialite with a string of long pearls, but you're going to have to serve somebody. Yes, indeed, you're going to have to serve somebody. Well, it may be the devil or it may be the Lord, but you're going to have to serve somebody. I think he's agreeing with what the Bible says there. Now, of course, many people don't agree. They don't like that kind of talk. John Lennon wrote a song in response. Serve yourself, it was called. Now, but the problem with that self-service attitude is it becomes a yet another form of slavery. Slaves to our passions. Slaves to our desires. A man is a slave to whatever has mastered him, Peter will say in his second letter. But the gospel is about setting us free. Free by when God brings us to Jesus and Jesus becomes the Lord of our lives. When we submit to him, we experience freedom. And that freedom isn't to do what we want, just to go out and do what I can do what I like now. No, freedom comes when we come to the point of doing what we ought to do. Doing what we were made to do. Living as God calls us to do. So how do we do that? Well, four things here, just to throw them out to you. What does it mean to live as God's slaves? Well, first of all, show proper respect to everyone. Show proper respect to everyone. Now, that word respect means to honour other people. It means to treat them as valuable. It means to treat them as people of worth, with the dignity due to them as God's creatures made in his image. Show proper respect to everyone. What a timely message that is. as we respond to the Black Lives Matter movement. I was interested to listen to that interview that Nigel referred to, the FIC website, two black pastors responding to the current issues and protests in our culture and across the world. And one of them made a really crucial point here. He said the Bible doesn't speak of races in the plural. The Bible speaks of one race. Paul does so in Acts 17. One race, the human race. And amongst, within that one race, there may be different nations, tribes, peoples and languages, but there is one race. All have the same dignity, all made in God's image, all equal in God's sight. Now if we live as God's slaves, then black lives matter. But not just black lives, every life matters, regardless of creed, colour or gender. That's the challenge to us. And I think we can model that in various ways, ordinary ways. You know, the way you treat your fellow motorists when you start back driving to work. The person at the checkout in the supermarket. The teenager or pensioner you pass on the road. I know somebody who, when he's in the shop, he notices the name badge of the person who is serving him, and he'll speak to the person by name. And he'll say, "How are you?" You see, he's treating them with dignity, with respect. Our theology should really make a difference here, producing good deeds. And then he says, love the family of believers. Love the family of believers. Peter keeps coming back to this in his letter, returning it time and again. Chapter 3 and chapter 4, he's already mentioned it in chapter 1. Living as God's slaves means loving one another deeply from the heart. Fellow believers, fellow Christians. On Father's Day, do you know what a father wants? Father wants his family to be together. He wants his kids to be together. And you know what he really wants? He wants his kids to get on well. He doesn't want them arguing or bickering. He wants them to get on well, to love one another. That's our Heavenly Father's delight. We live as God's slaves when we love one another deeply from the heart. And then we're to fear God. You see that? Fear God. Now this has the idea of worship. Revelation 14. Fear God and give him glory. Worship him. So we're called to obey the authorities, but we're not called to be in awe of the authorities. We're not called to worship. It's interesting that if you look down in through history, how many millions of people have lived almost in worship of their leaders, the Führer or the Emperor. Even in Peter's day, there was this growing movement of the Emperor cult, where people joined to kind of worship the Emperor. Now Peter says, no, we don't do that. We fear God. We worship him. Now, we might not be in much temptation to worship our Prime Minister or our government. But the fear of God can set us free from other forms of authority or power. The fear of social disapproval. There's a character in Dylan Thomas's Under Milk Wood, and she's famous for saying this: what'll the neighbours say? What'll the neighbours say? That was the thing that she feared most. But Peter's saying, you live as God's slaves, you fear God, you are set free from the fear of others. The fear of others' disapproval, the fear of peer pressure. No, you fear God. And then the last thing he says is, honour the emperor. We live as God's slaves when we honour the emperor. Yes, the emperor is to be honoured as a creature made in God's image and as someone appointed by God to rule over us, to rule over them. And this applies, of course, with our attitudes to our present government, our present prime minister and the cabinet. We are to honour them for their office's sake. Now, we may not approve of every policy. We may not approve of people's lifestyles in private. That's not the issue. The call is to honour those whom God has put into that role. As God's slaves, we respect those who are placed in authority. Remember Jesus' words to Pilate, "You would have no power over me if it were not given to you from above." Does all this really matter? Well, remember John Newton's comment to his friend. Most people are more likely to be convinced of the gospel by what they observe of you than what they hear from us as preachers of the gospel. So let's pray, shall we, for God's grace to help us to live the Lord's way in this strange land.